All stations, all stations, all call signs. This is Wrecker Actual, over. Stand by for transmission. Prepare to copy. This is American Vindicta. Hey, ladies and gentlemen, this is the American Vindicta Show. I'm your host, Doug Fortin. This is episode 115. We had previous episode 114 with Bob Griswold, and now we were lucky enough to get him here for a second time. So if you don't know this, Bob is one of the sponsors of the show. He has a readymaderesources.com. I'm telling you right now, I've never seen a more important time, Bob, for people to be prepared, not just spiritually, not just monetarily, but to have good equipment to use. Why do you think that's so important right now?
Well, I mean, I think it's obvious. History. All we do is look at history and say, you know, this nation is as an end of empire. The whole system of the world is changing. And the whole system of the world right now is coming under the control of an antichrist system that's designed so that you can't buy or sell without their mark. The digital currency, control of all things. And so if you want privacy and your ability to purchase anything, you're going to have to do it now, because they want to get this digital currency put in place within the next 6 months, is what they're talking about. They want to have completely intact, but they want to have the format for the digital currency already in place, which they already do have. I mean, they've worked on this for decades. They know what they're doing. They're going to roll it out to the public in increments that the public will accept it. Create some crises, and all of a sudden the public starts accepting it a lot quicker. And then it'll actually turn into you got to take a mark to be into the system. If you don't go into the system, then you can't buy or sell. Gee, I've read that somewhere before in an old book. You know, we know where it's headed. So if you can't see that, then I'm sorry. You turn the program off. I mean, you're not going to do any good, because history shows where this is going. This is tyranny coming into fruition. You know, every so-called dictator that has ever lived has dreamed of the power that they now possess through corporate wokeness, through digital currency, through surveillance mechanisms. The whole world is on social media, so they can dissect you, analyze you, predict you, and then influence you. What you see on social media is being influenced by your programming. And so all of a sudden, you know, you see the post they want you to see. I mean, I just did we're looking at a company, IC Breeze, that's a portable air conditioning system that you can plug in and air condition a small tent or something to that effect off 12 volt. And, you know, the next thing I know on Facebook, all of a sudden IC Breeze air conditioning systems came up. I mean, it's all done to dissect you and to predict you. And, you know, we know the realm of thought crimes is coming. And so when you do not fit within the political paradigm that they're going to put out, you will become a domestic enemy. That's why you won't be able to buy or sell. You know, they're going to restrict your life down until you comply. That's why you prepare. Because unless you want to eat, I mean, and there will be a tiered system coming, is no doubt, where let's just say you're at the top of the tier, call it tier five. You know, you're going to get the filet mignon, the lobster tails, the good wine. You're going to get all that. But if you're at tier one, you know, Christian, white male, conservative, whatever, you're going to get tier one stuff. And that's going to be, you know, bowls of slime to eat, you know, pink goo, bugs. You'll be living in the, you know, the nailed together shackle house, tin, you know, the spare tin, little cardboard, some wood, leaking roof. That's where you'll get to live. And be great dirt floor. Be grateful for it, because we'll kick you out if you're not. I mean, that sounds like hyperbole, but it's not. That's the paradigm that they're saying that they want to talk about. I'm getting a call right now from Mike Adams. I'm curious to see what he wants. That's why I prepare. You know, God in his mercy and his grace shows us two classic examples in the Bible of nations and societies that were under judgment. One was Egypt, when Joseph prepared enough food. And I've often thought of the logistics of doing this, millions of people for 7 years. I mean, you've got to do it. It's a massive building program. I mean, this is maybe equivalent to, World War II retooling the America's industry to make war machines, or the Apollo program to where as a nation, we retooled to build spaceships. I mean, there are massive retoolings of our nation to accomplish both of those feats. And right now we see retooling going on in this country and in this world right now to retool the world. And they say it. They want to fundamentally change the economy of the world. I mean, I'm not making anything up here. I'm just quoting what they say in open. So they're retooling right now the economy of the world for tyranny. We did it for freedom during World War II, and we did it for scientific advancement with the Apollo program. But right now, they're retooling the world for tyranny.
If you had to give your best example, don't give away obviously anything but OPSEC. But if you had to give your best example, you're traveling from one side of the country to the other by yourself, and that's when it hits. That's when everything goes from you can use your card to you have to have the mark of the beast in order to buy, sell, or trade. What would you be forced to do? How would you react needing to get home? What would you try to barter with? How would you talk your way back if possible?
Okay, the preamble to that would be, I've spent years training myself physically and mentally to endure situations that are not pleasant. That's the first thing. If you're not doing that, I'm sorry. Yeah, just, make it easy. If you have a bunch of drugs, swallow them, go out happy, because you're not going to make it. If you've not taken this time now to go to a martial arts class, to take one of the classes that you're going to offer, where you're going to be learning survival skills of different sorts. Matt Everett from Brush Beater offers survival skills, learning radio, learning how to tactically move at night, learning how to just practicing light discipline, last practicing noise discipline when walking through the woods. If you're not doing that now, I mean, good grief, all those skills would need to be employed in that situation, because depending on where you're at, you might be able to get a bicycle, but you're going to still have to be able to travel during times when there's not as much threat at night. That's why I tell people to have night vision, because I can ride a bike at night and be less people to be able to see me. It's pretty quiet. So I have far greater chance of surviving that. I could look around as I'm driving, have my night vision on, and I could see if people hiding in the woods waiting for me or whatever. And while they think they're going to ambush me, I'm technically going to ambush them. So those are things you need to be doing now, because if you wait to all of a sudden, oh, wow, the world broke down, I got to get home. I have my Crocs on. You remember the Crocs? I don't have the right socks. I don't have food. I don't have a bug home bag in my car. I have a Glock with 15 rounds in it. That's better than nothing. It's going to take some really pre-thought. That's what I want to say. You're not going to do it on the fly. You're going to have thought through this, trained through this before it ever happens. Because if you don't, the odds of you completing your task are going to be greatly diminished. Bad guys are going to get you, and you're just going to become some punk that's going to be a mule of some sort for them, dealing drugs. If you're a woman, God help you. Trading card, if you get the point. So you're going to have to know how to travel stealthily. You're going to have to know how to do signals intercepts, how to get any intelligence, how to be on the lookout for ambushes. All those things are going to come into play. And if you're not there, it's just, you're not going to make it. So right now, what I tell people to do, learn how to travel at night. I mean, if you don't have the knobs, get a set of knobs and go on, just try to walk through the woods at night. So that you can navigate back and forth and you learn the limitations of nods and the benefit of nods. But with nods, I can definitely see people long before they would see me. So it gives me a strategic advantage. I would be listening, I have a radio and I have an earbud. I don't want it going out and, open comm. I don't want an open comm radio where people can hear something. I want to have an earbud. So it's scanning. If somebody's using a radio in my area, I can listen to them. Because they might not know I have a radio, and all of a sudden they would be saying, hey, see that guy coming over here? Let's go get him. I pick that up and it alerts me. So I have ability to calm on the way back in. And I would also have, depending on where I'm at, the equipment I have, I would have the ability to calm home. not come home, but calm home. So if I'm out and my wife's home, she sees. And, you know, I have the ability to communicate long distances, so I could do that. So if I was 200 miles away from home and she knows I'm going to be on the radio at 2 o'clock at a certain frequency, if that frequency is burnt, meaning being used, we have alternate frequency, PACE, primary, alternate, contingency, emergency. I would have PACE frequencies laid out for her. And again, just to say that again, primary, alternate, contingency, and emergency frequencies. Pre-planned out, so she would know when, how, all you know, what do you need, three things on a graph to pinpoint a location. Well, you have to have location and time and frequency and location that we could communicate on. So communications would be huge getting home for signals intercepts and intelligence gathering, seeing what, you know, I don't want to go through a city that's burning down. You know, if the BLM's in there burning the city down and I had to get home, I don't want to do that. I'd try to find more places that were friendly and try to stay off major routes. Traveling home on the interstate would be a huge mistake. Yeah. That means I'm carrying good shoes with me. I'm not carrying cotton socks. Dave Hodges and I were talking about the other day, I'm going to carry wool socks. Cotton burns your feet. Wool, you can walk well in wool for long periods of time. If I'm in an area with snakes involved, he goes, what do you do if you have snakes? I get a set of gaiters. I carry gaiters with me. You know, gaiters are basically a Kevlar thing that goes up along your calf so a snake can't bite through it. You can get them anywhere, surplus ones, you can get fancy ones, whatever. But if I'm hiking through the woods to get home, I want to make sure that I don't get bit by a rattlesnake, a copperhead, or a moccasin. So I wear gaiters on if I had to do that, especially during the winter. You might not have to because it's a reptile and it's not going to be out. But during the summer, if I'm hiking home, the last thing you want to do is get snake bit. So it's going to take some pre-planning. You're not going to do it on the fly. That's the big thing I'm saying. You know, you also keep in mind that control points, bridges are going to be control points. So if you have to cross two rivers to get home, you might want to consider even carrying an inflatable raft or a little rubber ducky or anything that you could wait till night and paddle your way across the river and not have to go through some checkpoint, because I can promise you unlike on I-75 where we live, there's several rivers. So if I was in Knoxville and I had to get home to Telluca Plains, I have to cross a big river. That'll be a checkpoint, a choke point. And I, you know, if I need to, I want to be able to cross that river at night and not be able to be seen as well. And do that. So those are just some of the things that I would take into consideration. But if you're not planning now, you plan to fail.
When you talk about crossing water sources, they're not that expensive, but you can have something like a pack raft that is an inflatable raft that's specifically built for backpacks to go into people that are, you know, mountaineering, or, you know, they like to do a lot of backwoods stuff like I do. It's a good thing to have, and also a little breakdown paddle to put in it. It's the problem with that is that it's ounces equal pounds, and pounds equal pain. You know, that's why you have to train properly. But let me ask you a hypothetical here. And I'm pointing at you really aggressively with the.
I noticed that.
Yeah, I have tools everywhere.
Doug's patterns of life are coming out.
redneck with tools alert. If we're traveling at night, you don't want to make a roaring fire. If you do, you signal everybody there's somebody with a fire, right? That means a couple things to someone like me. For one, you have the knowledge and the capability to make fire. That's something I want if I don't have it. Three, I'm going to be able to see you. You're not going to be able to see me. I'm going to stay on the outskirts of the darkness, and I'm going to see everything that you're doing. I'll monitor, absolutely, observe, and then I'll move in.
You're setting an ambush up is what you're doing. Setting an ambush. Now, you can have a pot of beans cooking on a fire, draw everybody in, and you're going to be out there with your nods and thinking, okay. And believe me, there are bad guys that know that. I'll set the ambush up well. You know, they're going to smell the food cooking, and they might hear some girls giggling around there. And all of a sudden you go in and play for it, and you're going to have a blood splattered head.
That's one thing I would advise people. If you have a bug out kit that's in your vehicle specifically, and, you know, everyone's doomsday theater themed, but your bug out kit in your vehicle probably should not have the ability to make coffee and chili and beans. You probably need a dry packaged food. There's many of them out there. There's one out there, Bob, you probably know what I'm talking about. It kind of looks like a little burrito, but it'll have brisket and, you know, all different types of stuff in it. A good high caloric, high protein, dried food. And then obviously bottled water. Here's some reasons for that. And Bob nailed it. If you're traveling from point A and you need to get to point B, and you stop and you have to take your recreational break, you set up your hammock, you know, or you put out your, you know, your pop-up tent that weighs 80 pounds. And now you're making your beans and your chili and your rice and you're cooking your bacon and your coffee. If you've been in the woods for a week, you're starving, you're hungry, you're manic, you're going to smell something like that. And that caveman side is going to kick out in your brain. All right.
Yeah. Caveman brain comes in.
Yeah. You'll come to take that, you know, or, you know, you may not, not everybody's a bad guy. But you have to think that everybody is at some point. That's why being some of the things that we're going to train people in September, it's good to know how and when to use force. When is a good time to apply force to somebody? When is a good time to have a de-escalation of force, to talk somebody down? When is it a good time to amplify your voice and use your voice as a weapon? Use your verbal judo. How is it that you want to start learning when people have a furtive movements? Furtive movements, fairly simple. We're talking cop talk now. If Bob is standing in front of me and I'm saying, "Hey, Bob, how are you?" And he's saying, "Hey, Doug, how are you?" And I say, "All right, Bob, what do you need?" And Bob keeps touching the side of his hip or keeps touching the front side of his belt buckle. And I'm noticing, I'm paying attention. Well, I know as a cop that most people will carry their weapons, either knives, some sort of a melee tool, or a firearm within the front side of their person or on their 9 o'clock or 3 o'clock or even behind their back. But, you know, whatever. Some people carry them on their ankles. Those are weird people, all you ankle holsters. However, I'm going to pick up on that. And then I'm going to start profiling them. How big is he? Does he walk with a limp? Is he leaning to the side a little bit? Obviously, he has glasses. If I knock him off his head, is he going to be able to see me very well? What's my size difference? What's my age difference? I got to match myself to him because at any moment in time, it can turn from a benevolent encounter to a very malevolent encounter, where now I may be the deciding factor of who lives and who dies. Because, Bob, I'm never going to let you pull your gun before I pull mine.
You'd be stupid to. And, you know, hold your arm up, Dave. Can you mind you doing that? Hold your arm up. I can tell your tattoos have been professionally done. Those are not jailhouse tattoos. You know what jailhouse tattoos look like.
That's the big thing.
You see somebody with jailhouse tattoos, man, you've been going to spider cell number 10 because all of a sudden you're dealing with somebody who's been in a joint, probably done hard time, and for some felonious crime, more than just, you know, jaywalking. They've done hard time. And so you better watch out and know, just go online and look up jailhouse tattoos. If you see gang tattoos, and you can go online and look up gang tattoos, MS-13 tattoos, you know, Bloods, Crips, all, any of those groups, you can see those type of tattoos. And a lot of those organizations require that. So you start seeing that type of thing, boy, it doesn't even take a second for me to respond to that. I'm having my firearm out immediately. I'm not even going to think about giving him a chance to respond. And I'm also not going to keep my head on a swivel, because if he's coming up to me, approaching me at my frontal assault, I'm better watch my flanks, because I guarantee you he's got flankers out there that are just waiting to come and flank me. So you better get into a place where you can get cover concealment real quick and understand the nature of combat. These people are hardened. They know what they're doing. And you will never see the guy who shoots you in the head, because the guy talking to you is, "I mean, I'm just hungry. Please help me out." It's just like, you know, somebody asked me one time, "Well, what do you do if somebody comes to your house and it's some woman, you know, down your blouse down here, you know, I'm hungry, my children. What are you going to do?" I said, "I'm going to go to the back door because her boyfriend's trying to break in, coming behind me. She's not going to be out there alone." Her boyfriend's at my back door trying to break in so he can come and ambush me. That's what I'm going to do. I'm not going to sit there and fall for that. Wow. You know, nice, excuse me, chest lady, you know, and fall for that. You know, I'm not going to fall for the, my baby's starving. Yeah. Okay. I'm going to do a complete situational awareness drill on my property and a threat assessment. And, you know, you got somebody out there, lady, you're not going to be coming to my house. I think the case of that happening is going to be extremely rare of some woman walking around with a baby asking you, because she's going to be picked up immediately. Somebody's going to kidnap her and use her as her sex slave. And so this idea of woman walking around looking for food, I think is basically, if you see that, that's bait. That's bait right there. And you're being flanked. You're being set up to be a had. So that's just street creds, understanding what's going on the street.
Let me ask you this, Bob. Most people are not going to have this type of a setup sitting in the back of their car. Most people, right? We're not always most people. What would be the benefits and the downfall of walking around full kit? You know, you got your helmets, you got your long rifle, you got your plate carrier on, you got your bug out bag, you know, you're looking like John Wick. What's the drawback from that in a emergency doomsday like scenario?
Wait. Carry that stuff around in the summer. Now, if I have one that has PE plates in it, polyethylene plates, and those plates are still, they've reduced it down to about 3 pounds. But if you're walking around with steel plates in the summer with a tactical vest on, you're going to die from sweat. I mean, you're going to be dumping electrolytes and having severe muscle cramps really quick. And especially, you know, you're younger, your body can handle it far more than my body would handle it. So if I don't have the ability to replace electrolytes really, really quickly, you know, I'm going to seize up real quick. I'm going to maybe go into defibrillation because your heart won't have the chemicals. You know, your body runs on 3 salts. If you didn't want those salts, magnesium, potassium, and sodium, get out of balance, you're cooked.
Hey, you know, so that's actually a good point. And I'm guilty of this, all right? I got a sweet tooth. That's a really bad habit of mine. 9 times out of 10, I'll admit something. 9 times out of 10, because typically where I go, I'm going to go pick up feed because I live on a farm, right? Or I'm going to take the kids out to get an ice cream. I almost never leave, right? I'm a turtle. I just sit here at the house. But 9 times out of 10, I'm going to have a Dr. Pepper in my car. And not a water. Imagine that's just being honest. That's probably most of us, right? You're gonna stop at Whataburger and McDonald's and you know, get your crappy meal, or you'll have your soda and your candy, you know, your what we call pogey bait, and you know, that's your trip from one side of the country to the other. I'm gonna live off of the 7-Eleven. I might get a Gatorade once, right? Imagine then your car breaks down, end of the world happens, and you're dehydrated. You don't have proper nutrition. Man, you might as well just shot yourself.
Yeah, I carry electrolyte salts. I don't want to carry Gatorade and that because it's heavy. So I carry, you can get it, several companies.
The tabs.
Yeah, this is in a little packet that you can pour into a canteen or something like that. And it replaces the vital electrolytes your body has to have, especially in the summer. And you're pouring out sweat like a lady of the evening in church, as they say, you know, you're sweating like that, you know?
Yeah. I use liquid IV.
Yeah. Liquid IV is great. That's one. Yeah. That's a great one. There's other ones that are little crystals. The problem with Gatorade and stuff like that, it's just sugar. Sugar's going to make you thirsty. And, you know, I tell you, 25 years ago, we gave up all sweet drinks, just gave them up because, you know, I just put pounds on me I don't need, and sugar's immune suppressant and all those other things. So, I my body had to get used to it because it would detox some sugar. But anyhow, so I practice why, and in my truck, I have a 12-pack of water I carry with me. It's part of my bug home stuff. Now, you know, people ask me, how much does my bug home bag weigh? Well, it probably weighs about 90 pounds, and I want to clarify that. Because I don't know the scenario I'm going to face. Am I 10 miles away from home or 100 miles away from home? Am I going to have to go through a city or I'm not going to go through a city? Well, I have a protective mask in my truck. I'll ditch that. If I don't need it, I'm going to ditch it. You know, if I'm going through a city where dispersal agents are used, I might decide to keep it. If I have, you know, 10 days worth of food in my truck and it's a 1 day trip home, I'm dumping it. I want to go as light as possible to get to point A to point B.
And that's the part about traveling in a vehicle, using your vehicle. Your vehicle is an extension of your backpack. Okay. So I'm going to carry 3 to 4 times more than what I need, because typically my go bag that was in my backpack that I kept in my Tundra was, I mean, I had tennis shoes and I had flip flops. You know, then I had summer wear and winter wear. I didn't have a mix. I just had one or the other. And I had them all in compression bags, those vacuum sealed bags. And they all, I mean, everything vacuum sealed, put into a pack. It's on the bottom. It's probably the last thing I need. Then it goes to, you know, the survival equipment, the evasion equipment that I would need. And then all the way up to maps, which if you don't have maps of your area, get a map of your area. Buy a compass, a good compass, a metastatic compass, the one that we use in the military. And then, you know, I had batteries, I had flashlights, I had signaling devices, and I had food. I had a lot of beef jerky. I had a lot of, you know, dried nuts. Those things are just the calories and the sugars that I need to get me from A to B without being exhausted. You can put as much stuff in there as you want, but that was just in my pack. In my truck, man, I had like half a cabinet, a tactical cabinet in my truck for anything that I needed. Now that's how you should use your vehicle.
I recommend for a go home pistols to get an AR-15, you know, basically a short pistol, a arm brace that you can get. You know, you can get them, you know, that much. I know they're tiny anymore. So it gives you a medium range weapon that's going to be far more than a pistol. It's going to be probably lethal first shot at close quarter combat versus a pistol might not be lethal first shot. You can shoot some people with pistol 5 or 6 times and they still keep moving. But if I shoot you with an AR-15 pistol, even as a 5.5-inch barrel, it's still going to have enough energy in it to really do a damage to you and probably put you down after one shot. Carrying a full long weapon, it's problematic. It's hard to conceal. Also, you drop a lot of weight with a short pistol. So it gives me that happy medium in between. And that's what I carry is a machine pistol, you know, not a machine gun, but it's semi-automatic, but,
like this.
Yep. Something like that. That's my bug home. You know, that's perfect.
Yep.
You can see there's a reason why these are orange, is because I know what bullets are in it at this point. I know what bullets are in it. So I can quickly go to what kind of ammunition I want to use, but I can carry this a lot better. And I can shoot this out 200 yards. And believe me, it's still effective at 200 yards. It's not going to do well at 400 or 500 yards, but if you're bugging home and you're taking 500 yard shots, you've got to have your head examined. I want quiet. I don't want to be making noise. And something like this, if I shoot it, I want to have ear protection, because I'm telling you what, you think an AR-15 is loud, shoot this baby one time. It's going to pop your eardrums. So you want to have some even foam eardrums you can put in, you know, that protects your hearing, because it's going to be loud. But something like this, I can carry it. I can conceal it somewhat. And it's still going to have an extremely fatal response on something I shoot at close quarter combat versus maybe a 9mm pistol, you know, Glock. You know, people that have been shot 4 or 5 times with a Glock and still keep moving. The classic FBI training scenario from, I think it was the 80s. That those people were shot, you know, they were dead on their feet. They were effectively dead, but they hadn't bled out yet. So they shot more FBI agents, even though they were terminally wounded. When you, in that situation, if somebody does come to the point of using lethal force, you want one shot, one kill. I mean, you don't want people squirming around. You want to drop them and that's it. You don't want people, you know, and those are box 60 grain copper bullets.
Yeah, you know, a lot of that comes down to training. See, I carry a Scorpion EVO. I like these. Yeah. I mean, it's too light. It's like
it's has far more ballistic impact than a pistol has.
Oh yeah,
and you know, 5.56 or 7.62.
Yep, and I can break this down. You know, this SIG MPX that I have right here. There's a reason why it the reason why it won the Special Operations Command's contract, but this is almost the same thing, and it's $1,000 cheaper. Get you a decent red dot. Have a weapon light, a credible weapon light. Very easy to actuate, you know. And the reason and
let
why
me, I created, let me say something. If I have nods and I'm going home at nods, Surefire makes one that has a positive switch off. Mm-hmm. It's turn it to the left to go IR. I don't want a light that I'm not familiar with at night and violate light discipline. You make one mistake and flap that light, you just announced where you are to everybody on the planet. So the light I carry on my flashlight, because I do have nods, actually the bezel turns to IR. I flick it over to IR, so that's all that can come on is infrared. And if I'm using it for something else and I need light, I can flick it over to white light. But you can actually get a Surefire flashlight, tactical light that does that. It has a little pressure switch with it. So if I need some extra infrared light to see what I'm doing, you know, I can do that. And of course, there's an infrared laser involved, so I can light the situation up. But that's what I would carry and bug home, because I want lightweight. I want to peel the weight. And carrying an AR-15 around, if you've never done it, that's why when I see these people with, you know, bazooka launchers and nuclear weapons and, you know, all this other junk put on there, I mean, you've never carried that gun at all. That's a safe queen, is all that is. You carry from the safe to the cell phone.
This SIG MPX or SIG MCX is probably one of the heaviest AR-15s. It's a regular size rifle, probably one of the heaviest I've ever handled. However, I'm extremely big and very strong. I can carry that for a while, but after several hours of training with it, it kills me. I mean, you know, just doing up drills constantly with it, it starts to kill your shoulders. So you have to think about that. That's the reason why I do like little things like this. It's 9mm. My Glock's 9mm. So what does that mean? I have one round. I don't have a bunch of different rounds I have to worry about. So if I collect anything, I can resupply this and also my pistol. You know, it's little tips, little tricks of the trade. Plenty of people still carry wheel guns. Nothing wrong with that. If you're accurate with it, if you can reload your wheel gun as fast as I can my Glock, you're dangerous. And I can still do sub-second reloads. I was doing it just the other day with a young Marine. You know, but
yeah, the other thing, go ahead.
No, finish up.
Okay. The only thing I tell people is I get the call all the time. Well, I want to mount my night vision to my weapon. Well, that's 1980s. You don't do that anymore. Mounting a night vision to a weapon, you become combat ineffective real quick, because Doug, nobody's strong enough to hold their arms like this long with a rifle in their hand. You're going to get fatigued real quick, a minute or so, and you're going to be looking at dirt through your night vision. So you become combat ineffective.
Yep.
You want your nods on your head. So you're looking to maintain situational awareness, and then you want an infrared aiming laser on your weapon. It shoots out an infrared laser, so nobody without night vision can see it. Is that proper grammar? No one without night vision can see it. So it's infrared, and that way, if you see something that needs a bullet put on it, yeah, that target's not going to know it's been lased. It's an infrared laser, open to the public, and you can buy those. So that's what it is. And I'm telling you, you can go out. I have a 250-yard range in back of my property. You can go out there at night on the darkest night, and I can illuminate that target with an infrared laser. Well, you couldn't see your hand in front of your face, and at 200 yards away, I can ping that 8-inch steel over and over and over again.
That's right.
It's hyper accurate. And I don't have to even do it shoulder the weapon. I can do it from the ground. If I want to brace the weapon against myself where I get really good bracing, I can do that, because if that laser touching that target, it doesn't matter if I'm gangster shooting, you know, put the bullets up, you know, the gun over your head and throw the bullets out. If that laser is on target, it's going to hit. Pay dirt, you know, it's going to hit it. So, yep. So if you're getting nods, keep the nods on your head, get the laser for your weapon. And the other misnomer I want to dispel is I hear people go, I'm just going to shine a flashlight at you and blind you. I mean, turn the stupid TV off. You've been watching too much Hollywood. It doesn't do that. Night flashlights don't blind night vision. They don't blind you. Auto-gated technology today, I mean, it doesn't bother if a flashlight shines at it. It's designed to handle that, and to compensate for the light, it just shunts down. So that light doesn't hurt it. So turn off TV and go out and get yourself some nods and practice reality.
Yeah, I think a lot of these movies and TV series that people watch and they believe that it's reality, and one day they're going to find out that it's not reality. One day you're going to find out that whenever you shoot somebody, they don't fly 20 feet backwards and instantly die.
No. Even with a 12-gauge shotgun, they don't fly 20 feet backwards.
No. Hey, we're walking through the woods. We're trying to get home. What type of assets do the enemy carry?
Well, it all depends on where you're at. NODs are becoming more and more prevalent in America as the technology and the prices come down, even though they still are expensive. Thermal is still fairly pricey, but having both of them, it really gives you an advantage. There are applications where night vision would not work. If I'm implanted in the what you would call the jungle, and I've covered myself up well with leaves and it's dark, dank, rainy, whatever, cloudy, the night vision is not going to see you. But if I pull a thermal unit out, man, your body heat's going to come right through. And we've used that during training scenarios where we've actually done that. We were walking down a jungle lane and we didn't see anybody. And I pulled the thermal out and boy, there they were. Now, Jamie Walden knew exactly what to do in that situation. And we absolutely catastrophically won that battle. The other team didn't fare too well. And it was kind of fun doing it, you know. And we're using blank firing adapters and blank ammunition. So you're actually hearing bangs and all that other stuff going on. And it was quite exciting. But just to know that, you know, Jamie, he had the training. He knew what to do. Okay, there they are. We're going to flank them, come up behind them. We're going to draw the fire, which he did. And as soon as we drew the fire, they lit themselves up and the team came right down on top of them, the flanking team, and man, just wiped them all out. So, I mean, that's what you could be facing. That's why I'm telling you, if the sexy chick is at the front door, worry about her boyfriend at the back door. If you have a guy coming up to you right to your face, you better be watching your flanks. You give yourself space and distance. Give yourself something in between you. If you're in the woods, put a tree between you. And keep if he's trying to negotiate around that tree, you keep negotiating with that tree in between you. Don't give him direct access to you. Make sure he has to run through something, you know. Let him get close.
Here's another thing I would advise, and I'm sure you have some experiences for this. Observation is key. And we're talking about, you know, recce stuff. We're talking about reconnoitering stuff. So on my kit, I keep a monocular. Now, I'm very used to it. I can range with it. You can actually find rangefinder monoculars that are out there. And it's, you know, those are two things that I keep on me. I like having a rangefinder. I like having a monocular, some sort of a binocular optics if need be. If I see a group of people, I want to be as far away from them as possible and then observe them. If I'm coming up to any type of choke point, if it's, you know, a bend in the road in the forest, or if it's the bridge, or if I'm going in a cavernous area, I want to get into a high range area where I can see everything. I can canvas everything without moving on it. If need be, I can write a range card. You know, from here to here is 500 meters. Here's the water. Here's the tree line. Possible ambush points. I can pregame all this in my head. Where would I ambush me at? Right. These are the type of drills that we used to do in the military, and these are the games that we would use to play against each other. As a civilian, it's good to do that now. You know, go for a walk in your town somewhere, or go for, you know, a walk in a national forest and find those areas and bring you just a little, you know, binocular set with you. And, you know, just consistently, you know, every 20, 30 feet, stop and observe. You want to listen. You want to look. You want to, you know, smell what's going on around you. Feel that spider sense, you know, that gut feeling. If you got that bad feeling, use your natural senses that God has given you. That's what you'll need to rely upon and not be so heavily reliant upon technology. MVGs are great. We can't see in the dark, so we use MVGs and thermals. They're perfect. But during the day, probably is when you're going to be traveling a lot as well, or it's when you're going to be sleeping. So having the ability to see far, that's going to be very pertinent. But let me ask you another thing. You're traveling from A to B. Let's say you're going down the Appalachian Trail to get home. Where would you sleep at?
I wouldn't sleep on the trail, that's for sure. I would move off the trail. I would do cold camping, so I would not have a fire because, I mean, again, unless I was using fire for ambush, I would do cold camping. So there would be nothing that creates heat or light, any of those things. I would honor all the disciplines. I would be quiet. I'd talk, and if I was had another person with me, we'd be talking in our whisper talk, like that. So you can't hear. We wouldn't be talking loudly in any way. I would have my comms muted if I did have comm. If I had any kind of cell phone, anything like that, it would be turned off. I don't want to violate noise discipline because somebody calls, or, you know, I have some alarm I accidentally set on my phone that 2 o'clock in the morning. I don't want that going off. So I would make sure that everything I had, I would not have clanky things that make noise as I'm hiking. That's why, even Velcro, if you can get strapped down, it's better. Velcro does make noise when you open it up. So if I have strapped down lanyards, then it doesn't make noise when I release them. So those are all things that you would want to be considered. And obviously weight. You're going to want to travel as light as possible. Like I said, I have a friend who traveled the whole Appalachian Trail, and they cut their toothbrush off to, it was about 2 inches long, and they even drilled holes in it to abandon weight. We all think we all want to have, all accessories and everything we can imagine. But like I said, with my bug home bag, at the situation where I'm at, the mileage I'm at, the conditions I'm going to have to travel through, all of that. If I know where I'm at and I know how to get home via the woods, I don't need to keep a compass. I don't need to keep things. I want to go as light as I can. Now, if I'm only 10 miles away from home, I may be able to hump 80 pounds home and keep it all. But if I'm 100 miles away from home, humping 80 pounds home is going to be hard. So I'm going to want to lighten it up some. And I even carry several different types of bags. I have actually a small bag in my truck. Well, I could just dump the big bag and carry the small bag if I'm close to home and I need to get home that way. So just essentials are in there. Water filtration is essential. Calories are essential. If you can carry a little bit of Pedialyte with you and you're not used to being in the woods, anything high electrolyte, carry it, because you're going to sweat. And if you sweat and lay down at night, have you ever woke up with some of those monster Charlie horses? I actually have let's see if I have a bottle here. I carry this stuff with me. These are amazing. Leg cramp, PM. So, I mean, I've had a Charlie horse before, and you wake up and it's like excruciating pain. I can put the stuff onto my tongue, and in just a few minutes, that goes away. It's all natural, all ingredients. So pretty neat stuff. Inside is a very small bottle, but I carry that with me because the last thing you want is to have some massive cramps because you're not used to it, or you've really exerted yourself hard. And, at night, maybe some muscle in your body wants to seize up on you. We have a thing called the Chair Hollow Challenge here, which is a 110-mile bicycle race that goes through the mountains. So, you're going up to 6,500 feet and down. So you're going up and down. And what's called SAG for it, supplying gear, our radio club does. That means I'm driving a circuit. If anybody gets in trouble, I pick them up, take their bike, and get them back to base camp. I remember this one gentleman I picked up, and his calf was literally turned sideways, and he was screaming in pain because his electrolytes got out of whack, and his muscles started seizing up on him. And I looked at him and went, "Oh my gosh, that's horrible looking." You don't want to wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning, because I can promise you the next day that muscle's not going to be working right. It you're going to be sore. So being able to mitigate that is extremely important. That's why, again, these are Highlands leg cramps, PM, really good stuff. And like I said, it's all natural. So you're not taking anything that's weird on you. So I look at the ingredient right now. It's all plant-based. So good stuff to have, good stuff to carry in your car, because especially if you're not used to hiking, you are going to cramp. You are going to cramp. And if you're not used to hiking, your feet are going to take a beating. That's why carrying moleskins. So that it's really, I work through the pain, but I don't want to be hiking with open blisters that have popped. They're very sore when you do that. And it can actually be an area of infection because your feet get, you broke your skin barrier and your feet are hot and sweaty, and it's a perfect ground for bacteria to go, and you can get an infection that way. So you want to be able to cover that broken blister and protect yourself. So, moleskins are great for that.
Yeah, I'm very particular. I'm very particular about my feet. Marine Corps taught me that, so I carry the little small bag of foot powder in there, and probably like five or six changes of socks. I'm very particular about my feet. That's how you're gonna die.
Yeah, I carry an inner liner sock, And then but they're wool. I'm not going to put cotton on my feet. I've done it before in hike, and the cotton burns your feet. And you get blisters everywhere. Wool does not do that to the degree. And plus, wool is also, if it gets wet, it still remains its thermal qualities. So if you don't have wool socks in your car and you've got, you know, your six pack of Walmart socks that are made out of cotton, get rid of those things. You're going to rue that you have them. Put some wool socks, merino wool socks in your bug home thing, and more than one pair. Again, make sure you know if your bug home shoes, if you're putting heavy socks on, especially during the winter, that your shoes might need to be a half size bigger, because you put, you know, half inch of sock on there, and you don't want your feet just smashed into those boots where you get to actually create wear points on your feet. So you just want to make sure that you have a pair of boots in your car that's going to be applicable for the situation you're in, temperature, you know, environment. You know, if I was hiking home in Florida, I wouldn't have to worry about high boots as much, because I'm not walking across craggy rocks up and down mountains. You know, I could get more maybe with a low ankle shoe. But if I'm walking across mountainous terrain, I'm going to want to protect my ankles. Yeah, you've got your ankle jacked up before being twisted on some unlevel ground. It's not fun. It's not pleasant. That's the other thing, too, is I carry ibuprofen, even though I normally don't like taking it. But if you're hiking long distances, the chances of you getting some, you know, swelling or injury, or it's a high probability. And Motrin will help mitigate the pain and help mitigate the swelling. So that's something I carry in my bug home bag. I have that. And those are just some ancillary things people might not think about. But
even the extent of having like a little boo-boo kit, you know, one of the things that you're going to experience the most if you're doing any type of, you know, triple canopy type stuff, where you're walking through really dense brush, you got briars, you know, getting hit by branches, you're probably going to end up falling and embarrassing yourself. You know, I've done that before. I was hunting hogs, and I, thinking that I'm the master of the forest, I tripped over a stick, Bob, probably that thick, tripped, and I fell, and this pinky is the one that snapped sideways. That hurts a lot. You know, one of the things I always carry with me is electrical tape. Took it, taped my finger back to the other finger. You know, there's having a little small medical kit is good, but I'll warn you, don't just get the pre-made medical kits that you buy from the stores. They're very basic. Sometimes they don't have everything in there that you need. Duct tape for me is a must. We use duct tape consistently. Duct tape's a must. I would have very large bandages for lacerations. Lacerations are one of those things that most of these kits that you buy from the stores, they don't have anything in there for, you know, a laceration that's more than 3 or 4 inches long. Butterfly bandages is a very good one to have, something that you can help close a wound with. Super glue. I would have 4 or 5 different things of super glue, because it's super glue. It can sometimes harden itself and then it's ruined. I would have, you know, obviously tape. I'd have tourniquets on me. I would have something like a SAM splint. It's very cheap, very light. But if you ever have it to where, like, you break something and you need it immobilized and then tape up, like, you know, your wrist, your hand, your, God forbid, your ankle or your feet, a SAM splint, that's going to be very useful. What else would you put inside a medical kit?
Well, I mean, you mentioned Steri-Strips. You know, I use Steri-Strips because they're simple, lightweight, and you can easily close a wound with them. I would also have a triple antibiotic, something to have in there. So if I get that, you know, I want to prevent infection. The last thing you want is some infection that goes into your blood, and then all of a sudden you're trying to hike home with 103, 104 temperature. You're not going to do it. And, you know, you die because you let something get infected. And then there's things you need to do ahead of time. I tell people, if you have dental work that needs to be done, get it done now, because, you know, people die. You get a cavity that goes into your jaw, drops down into your fascia plane here, and you die of a heart attack from a tooth decay. So get your dental work and stuff done now, because that's the last thing you want to have is tooth pain on the way home. What was that movie with Tom Hanks in it, where he's stranded on a desert island and he had to knock his tooth out? And, you know, because I've had a toothache. They are incredibly painful. Yeah. I mean, you can't do anything else but think about the pain going on. away painful. I remember when I went to the oral surgeon and he was dealing with it, he put something in the vein, some happy juice in my veins. And I remember I was like, oh, thank you. Thank you. You know, because I just went into La La Land, you know, and I was like, thank you. Because the pain just went away. That's how bad it was. It was searing pain. So, you know, those are things that you have to have. Again, I carry a Camelback so I can fill up water. I use the Sawyer mini filter. It's a personal one-person filter that I can actually put a little bag that comes with it, fill the bag up, squirt water into my Camelback, or I can just use it as a straw, suck water out of a river and drink it like that. They advertise it up to 100,000 gallons, so probably more water than I'll be using in a lifetime, as a back-flushing thing. So if algae gets sucked up into it, you can back-flush it. But water is going to be critical. Obviously, the other thing is you mentioned, I want to have my pistol belt with some critical supplies on it. So if I have to dump my pack, you know, if I have to go recon, I don't want to carry a 50-pound back on a recon to see what I'm doing. I dump my 50-pound back, camouflage it, go do my recon. But I want to have a pistol or something and a tourniquet and a few other things on me that I would want so I could dump that and still have some supplies on me and, you know, with a pistol belt. And I would tell people, get rid of the leg holsters, guys. Those are, you know, that's Rambo stuff. You want your pistol on your hip, not on your leg. You don't want it strapped down to your knee. That's ridiculous. It, you don't put it there. So if you got one of those holsters, tie a rope to it and use it as a boat anchor. They're no good. Get your pistol's on your belt. It's on your hip.
Yeah. Another thing I would add to that is on my pistol belt, I have two general purpose pouches. Yeah. I learned that from law enforcement. There's never a bad time to put food, water, you know, extra medical gear, whatever, you know, extra bullets that I might need. I have those general purpose pouches on there. I don't like dump pouches because that's a range thing. We're talking about, you know, real life stuff. A dump pouch, things are going to fly out of it. My cargo pockets are probably going to be my dump pouch. That'll be where I do my tactical reloads or where I put empty magazines at until I can find a place to reload and put it back on my kit. However, hygiene. Don't be the one who dies in the woods because you smell bad and you refuse to put some dude wipes in your pack. You know, Hey guys, if you got a stomach flu, if you got any type of stomach pain while you're out in the woods, good luck finding something to wipe yourself with. Have fun with that one. Pre-plan now. You know, they're $4 a pack. Not only that, you can wash yourself with it. If you go a full day of romping through the swamps and sweating, the last thing you want to do is you want to start having hot spots underneath your arms where you'll have backpacks or along the hips, underneath the legs and around your butt where your pants are. You're going to develop hot spots. Hot spots develop into blisters and sores. That's what gets infected. And if you get staph infection from any of this, that's a painful death. And it can be avoided by cleaning thyself. Just keep some dude wipes on you. You know, don't be nasty.
That's the same thing. Yeah. I mean, I have a toothbrush. I want to be able to brush my teeth. I do have the dude wipes because not only that, but I might want to wash my face off, feel clean. I mean, the psychological thing of being dirty, it does wear on you. I want to feel in some ways that I can clean myself. And again, if you are the guy, I tell people this, if you know, people want to go buy a Walmart tent, have at it. Wait till it breaks after three times of using it. You know, I carry a level 3 tent, which means it's going to be able to take high winds. It's going to be waterproof. Nothing worse than sleeping in a wet sleeping bag because your tent leaks. I use a bivy tent. It has it's made by ProForce. It has a bathtub bottom in it, meaning that up 4 inches up the tent, it's completely waterproof. So if I'm sleeping and it's pouring down rain doesn't get in there, I can stay dry. So I carry their ionosphere, ProForce's ionosphere with me. That's my bug home tent. It's lightweight, but it has a bathtub bottom. I can see it. And I can position myself where I still have good view out my tent so I can see what's going on. I'd probably set up a little mirror so I could see behind the tent, you know, see what's going on behind the tent at night. I can just set that mirror up, look at my nods and see anybody's coming up behind me and keep situational awareness that way. But those are some things I do. But you want to keep it light if you got a long way home. I know the book Going Home series. I think Glenn Tate. I think he does a pretty good job of describing what you're going to face going home. I think it's 8 books in the series. Obviously, the first book really gives you a good idea of desperate people. The guy he's coming home and all of a sudden he meets the yuppies. And the guy has his nice Docker shoes on and he's got some chick with him that thinks that she's entitled to anything. And the guy coming home is a prepper and he's saying, and she's saying, take it from him, take it from him. And the guy the prepper guy looks at him and says, man, this chick is going to get you killed. And she would, you're going to meet people like that. He met some druggies on the way home that were, threatening him. And, they thought he was just some average little mope. And boy, he put one in him, because he drew quick and knew what he was doing, didn't hesitate. And put one in the guy and his wingmen, as they say, they kind of dispersed real quick. There's a lot of things you're going to have to take into consideration.
And that's the final part.
That's what I'm saying. If you're not mentally prepared, go ahead.
That's the final part of this. Like what you're saying, mental preparedness, training. Train. Get outside, get in shape now. That's what's going to keep you alive longer than anything else. Learn to use your hands, some sort of a self-defense technique. I recommend boxing, jiu-jitsu, wrestling. Go with one of them, right? Most of the time, you're going to start here, and it's going to end up on the ground. You better learn how to defend yourself standing and then onto the ground. Firearms training is key. Medical training is probably just as important as firearms training. And the last part of that is keeping your cool. Not running around trying to – this isn't Call of Duty. This isn't a video game. You need to keep your cool, keep your mouth shut. If you don't have anything to say, don't give anyone any OPSEC. Don't give them any of your operational reasons for why you're out doing what you're doing. Keep your mouth shut, keep your eyes open, situational. Ladies and gentlemen, you can catch the rest of this awesome interview on our Rumble channel. This will not be played on YouTube as most of the things that me and Bob talk about would get us banned on YouTube. So if you want to see the rest of this awesome interview, there's about another 30 minutes left in it. And I implore you, go to the Rumble channel, subscribe, like, comment below on it. Take what we give you, train, prepare, and don't fail yourself or others by sitting on the sidelines, sitting on your couch, and watching the world go by. Right now is the best time in the world for you to get up off of your excuses, get to work, get in better shape, get prepared. My name is Doug Thornton. You've been listening to the American Vindictus Show. I'm out of here. All stations, all call signs. Prepare for transmission. This is Wrecker Actual. Dearly beloved, avenge not yourselves, but rather give place unto wrath. For it is written, vengeance is mine. I will repay, saith the Lord. End of transmission.